We've done this before.
We know what we're at here. Right, I'm ready to go. I just think we just jump into this and just see where it takes us.
See where it goes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Unreal. So, hello and welcome to another wee experimental episode. We're trying a couple of different formats. And this one here, I don't know, we're going to call it loosely Three Beers, Three Books. The idea is we bring back previous guests on the show, get them to talk about books, and maybe have a wee bit of beer along the way. So we're joined today by James Leckie of Leckie Design. James, good to see you again. It's been about a year and a half since you were on the show. Probably more.
Pre-COVID, there you are.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID, very good.
And Greg, you were probably about, I don't know, 6 months ago.
Yeah, no, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me. Surprised.
Yeah. You're like, we must have passed the test. We did all right then. Yeah. I think that where this idea sort of came from was we were doing our interview, Greg, and in the classic question, like, who would you take out for coffee? You mentioned the big man here.
It did not.
Well, it was actually for beer, not for coffee.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, which is why we're having beer.
I never even got the bloody coffee.
Yeah. And what are we on today, James? What are we drinking?
We're on Heaney's. That was a recommendation of Matthew Thompson. We're on Heaney's Irish Blonde, Irish Stout, and Irish Pale Ale. So, and we've started on the stout, and I have to say, it's lovely.
Yeah, like I wanted to give a shout out to these guys. I like them. I think they launched maybe last year. It's brewed on the Heaney family farm and up in Ballachy, and they are connected to kind of the Seamus Heaney brand.
They also
do their own thing, but no, I really enjoy it.
Well, it brings me back 60 years ago. You guys wouldn't remember that so well. It might be a bit foggy for you, but 60 years ago when I was about 3 or 4, my granddad used to slip me a wee sip of Guinness.
Really?
Yeah. And I have to say the fondness is stuck.
Yeah. And how did the recipe 60 years ago compare with the recipe today?
It was a bit harsher, I have to say. It was a bit more bitter, but it is quite, I don't know, alluring. There was a harshness to the flavour, a quite bitter flavour of the original stout, the old bottle stout. But I still have a fondness for it. I do. I like the Guinness. The new stuff's cream. It's not the same. But that, I have to say that Irish stout there from Heaney's is really nice. There's a depth to the flavour. It's really lovely.
Have any of you seen the latest Guinness advert?
No, I haven't. Tell me.
I'll send it to you, but it's just genius advertising.
Oh, they are.
They're super. I remember hearing stories that they used to give Guinness to people in like nursing homes and hospital, like build them.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe not necessarily Guinness, but definitely stout.
Yeah, stout. But I would have thought Guinness would have been one of the front runners. I mean, there are Murphy's and there's a few other brands around, but I think Guinness has just become the one synonymous with stout now.
Unreal. So your predictions then, which one of these three do you reckon you will like the most based on your usual taste?
You see quantity and quality. And the decision to take the third is always taken after you've had the second, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this has gone down very well at the moment. It's very tasty.
It is, yeah, very good. I've actually, first day of the Scale X mastermind with our friend Brendan McGurgan tomorrow.
Right.
So if I go in with a hangover, I'll be blaming you. So.
No finer man. Finer man.
Some deep breathing maybe beforehand.
What are you doing? You're not doing that nonsense, that cold water stuff, are you?
Oh, yeah, Wim Hof, yeah. So I actually did.
Are you doing Wim Hof?
Mate,
I'm signing with him on this. I'm all about that. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, cold showers and cold swimming. Jane was up cold swimming the North Coast today. Loves it. But that Wim Hof stuff, that's deep root.
The breathing stuff. Have you done it before?
That's like going to the dentist and say, take more canals out there. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Have you ever done it before?
I did a course a couple of years ago, not directly with Wim, but just one of his instructors, and then, kind of fell off the wagon a little bit. And then,
so have you done the breathing stuff?
Yeah, I do that most mornings.
It makes you feel like electricity coming out of your hands.
I don't know.
You didn't get it?
No, not
You're supposed
quite.
To fast, I think.
Yeah, a couple of my friends do it. One did it and fell in the shower and nearly knocked himself out. So I think it does happen quite a bit, but... Yeah,
I mean it's serious stuff. It really is.
Cold showers are the best, but I've such a love hate with them. Even I would like procrastinate before going in. You just have to like trick your brain to get in there. But
I've said to Greg there the first day back in the sauna after like 16 months, it just opened up next door.
I would go there usually
twice a day, like before and after work.
Yeah,
I've missed it terribly. And you go in, you're like, flip me.
And is there a plunge pool beside it?
No.
There's not?
There's a swimming pool, but it's not.
It's not. It's kind of lukewarm.
Yeah. You plunge pooler?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so. And I mean, how high can you bring your shoulders up? Whether it's the same at the cross, you know, when you're walking in, you're absolutely wrecked. But I do enjoy it. I remember we're down in Jane and I were down in the spa somewhere, Morganporth. Oh, there's a hotel down there. I can't remember the name, but it's yeah. So we were in there, the Scarlet Hotel, and they had a plunge pool, but they put a barrier so you couldn't jump in. You had to walk down the stairs. And that was
That's the worst.
It was.
You'd rather
criminal.
Jump in.
First day, I decided to say, and I'd try and make it to 10 seconds. I got to 8 and was out. third day, I stayed 3 minutes, but I hated most of it. But people were watching, so I wanted to act the Iron Man.
That's the way.
So, James, catch us up real quick, because a lot's changed in your world since the last time you were in here. So give us just a brief what the last year and a half or so has brought. Big changes.
Yeah, I'm sympathizing just before I do start that there with Greg here, Brenton McGurgan. Now, there's a character. And you said about electric, you feel electric come out of your hands. I want to punch the guy. But he's a super, super, super guy. Brilliant guy.
We had a catch-up last week, and I was saying you should get Brendan on.
Oh, he's excellent.
Well, there you go.
There's a rumour that James has got a picture of Brendan on his wall.
And when you
true?
And when you say...
What's your screensaver, actually?
It's a quote. It's a quote. God, no, you're going to fit me in this spot here. Give me a couple of seconds because that's an age thing. Memories lose me, but it's a quote from Brenton. Oh, what is it?
I love whenever people say, I've heard a rumor, even though it's direct information that you know is completely true.
He is a good guy. Definitely recommend getting him on the podcast sometime. So
yeah, he's excellent. He's excellent. Yeah. Super guy. So you were asking me a question there. Apologies.
What's happening?
Last 18 months ago, I was the owner and CEO of a company and I'm no longer. bizarre. Through the whole COVID thing, we were approached by a global company in our industry and we'd been kind of, swimming in their waters for some time and trying to be attractive. There were 2 or 3 big global players. One in a former period was our distributor, but we'd really fancied this, just the synergies with this company. And we'd kind of just built our strategy around, and it was a bit of eggs and, one basket, all your eggs in one basket, but we just felt it was a right fit. And pre-COVID, 3 years ago they approached us, but the previous CEO really wasn't a partner he could have had. He was brutal. But this new CEO by the same name, Thomas, was just very charismatic and very good and expansionist and, really interested in the strategic fit and the alliance and all the rest. But so we got talking and things worked out very, very well. And right in the middle of, it was November 19. We actually had the conversation in a hotel in Dublin and it all worked out in terms of, the notional figures and stuff like that. But then in February when COVID hit, we thought, well, this is not going to work out. This is all going to stop it. But they're a huge organization. They're global and they're owned by a huge fund as well. So for them, this is a blip, nice. And it just, it all went through to our surprise. And by August, I was out.
Wow. Yeah. So what was it like selling the baby then? Because that's been...
It's my name on it. And it's been a big part of my life. And an awful lot of things I believe were, my drivers were being attached to that business and a lot of my, who I was, and it validated me. And,
absolutely.
And, if I had a lot of my self-worth was probably invested in the role and stuff, but I was never so glad to get out. it must have taken all of 2 or 3 days to go, what was I doing? Chasing people, shouting at people. And that leadership is a whole lot of things, but I had a feeling it was set direction and work them as hard, be demanding sort of thing. But I really, since then, I've been so glad to sit back. Now, I'm doing other bits and pieces, but I've
been
so...
You're not just playing golf.
No, and that's a good idea. That's a really good idea, not to play golf. But, so I've started my design company and doing other things and so on. I'm really enjoying it.
Very good.
Just mucking about, but nice. Yeah, good. So, but it's been a really, really good experience. Really good experience just to sit back a bit and relax and not do so much work.
Brilliant, man.
Yeah.
And Greg, yourself, in the startup scene, 6 months is kind of 3 years. And we caught up recently and I was surprised to hear everything that was going on. Not surprised, but I was like, wow, flip me, these guys are moving.
Yeah, no, things are moving quick. So thankfully COVID has been a good tailwind from an e-commerce perspective. But to be honest, the sales last year were kind of where we wanted them to be, just slightly different profile. Yeah. But no, it's good to catch up with James. And can I ask a couple of questions about the deal? Like, what was your overriding emotion kind of once that deal completed or next day? Was it...
Because of COVID, I suppose, you know, and it must be with all deals. It's not over till it's over, you know, when you until you're signing the line, it's all through and the checks in the bank and so on. You're not really sure what's going to happen. But with COVID, it added a lot more, I suppose, anxiety around that point. So that the overall one was one of relief to get the deal through. And without any, you know, you always hear with these, because there's an American part of the company, and you always said in the last minute, brinkmanship coming in to try and take a slice out of it, but that didn't happen. They were good to their word, which was really positive, and their relationship's really strong since then, so it's good. There was a tinge of sadness, but what I didn't do was I didn't do any, you know, final farewell or no town halls and...
No big massive Wolf of Wall Street final speech now.
You know, really? You're the only one that cares about you, so forget about it, get out, you know. It's, I've got people I've known for years in there, and they're good, but I'm not going to stand up and embarrass them by, you know, having a farewell nonsense. So, when I shook a few hands and got out to hell, that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
Let the new guy, who's absolutely superb, Ben Stocks, let Ben at it. I mean, he's an amazing guy, So, yeah, he's the brain the size of a moon, and he employs it very well. So he's a great guy. Yeah, I believe you know the Ben fellow as well.
Yeah, I do know Ben. Yeah, very, very smart guy. Yeah. So, no, fair play for having the confidence and humility to admit that. I think even, you know, a lot of people maybe wouldn't do that. I obviously met James, but how long ago did I meet you? A couple of years ago?
Feels like an awful lot longer, to be honest. But I think we met probably 3-4 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It was Danske Bank introduced us, and in fairness, you took the meeting, and traction was kind of something we bonded on, which I think we're going to discuss today.
Yeah, you're better at this than I thought you were going to be. That's a smooth transition. Like, that's scripted. Like
a bit of a segue there.
Coming after you, Matt.
I know. I'm like, get out of the studio right now. He's dynamite on the mic here. So yeah, in both of your interviews, both of yous mentioned Traction. Yeah. So tell me, Greg, what that book actually is. And if you want to kick us off with a couple of kind of your key takeaways from that.
Well, I think James knows it better than me, but I guess it probably is an operating system to run your business. There's a couple of these out there. There's Traction Scaling Up from Vern Harnish. Probably, would you say E-Myth? Hello, E-Myth.
Yeah, going beyond me. I mean, Holacracy put me off anything else. Once I got the traction, I just said, I'll stop here.
So
you looked at various systems then, did you?
I've read different books. Scaling Up is one that I do like. It's kind of like Traction, but just maybe slightly more complicated or a little bit more in depth. But Traction is really good, and it's one of those books like Scaling Up I read, and it's like, it's so good. You're like, should I tell anyone about this book?
Or will they take it from me? You'd have to get them a copy of the book, let them read it for themselves.
Yeah. And we use the methodology within Black Box. There's sort of 6 key components. Do you know them all off by heart?
Haven't a clue.
I was going to try them, but there's vision. And your guy...
Gino Wickman, is it?
Yeah, Gino, he talks about, is it vision without traction? It's a hallucination.
Yeah, fair enough.
There's 6 key components.
But there's good science behind the book.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's vision, data, process, traction, issues, and people. So Gino would talk about, you know, yes, there's hundreds of issues within business, but if you group them into those 6 key components, and then it's really just what having your... 10-year BHAG, to borrow Jim Collins, maybe a 3 or 1 year target, and then you've your quarterly rocks. You know it probably better than I do.
How did you come across it, Jim?
I read the parable. I read Getting a Grip, which is a bit waffly, to be honest. But I got a gist of it, and I was looking for a system. Probably unlike you, I'm completely disorganized and I really don't have a methodology for managing a business. And a lot of it's shooting from the hip. And you go to leadership courses and some of the nonsense that's spun out there, honestly, it's just ridiculous. But you pick up something and come back. But there was nothing which was comprehensive. You got snippets of this and snippets of that and read it. And you were, but it was all make it up yourself. And we are largely, I mean, you make every day up as you go along. That's what happens. You're wing every day and make it look like you've thought this through. But what I liked about the traction process was it was a process. It was a system that you can employ that seemed to have good sense behind it. And, it covered all the bases in terms of vision and managing processes. And I really like the way it focuses on the priorities and it doesn't allow politics or waffle to get in the way. So, in a practical sense. And we came up with a long-term, goal. One of those, what do they call the term? Is it? It's the big 10-year goal.
BHAG.
Big hairy goal. It was, and it really worked for us. We actually really managed to tie a lot of our research and development and a lot of our longer-term aspirations around this and really center them on it and go out to market on that and win a lot of, trust and loyalty with customers over it. So that worked very, very well for us. 3 years was a bit of a, what's the plan look like and where should we be in 3 years? But then I think the first year objectives are really, what do we need to get done this year to let that 3 year thing happen or 5 year thing happen? So it is very pragmatic in many ways. And that's what I liked about it. And you can give them a book and say, this is how we're going to do it from now on. And it worked.
Yeah. And would you say that it's a book that's for like any business owner? Or would you say it's specifically tailored to people in that more engineering sort of space?
No, I know loads of different industries, gyms, service businesses, everyone. So it is just a way to do it. I think, in black boxing, people, sometimes we like to complicate things. I think people underestimate, like, it's not rocket science, but it's not easy to have the discipline. And I probably lack the discipline to do it. Like, you have to have like a level 10 meeting and share good news. And it does require a fair bit of discipline. And most average businesses, it's easier to not follow a system like this and just wing it and get comfortable with dysfunction, whereas this kind of helps you keep things sort of top of mind. I like even the fact that he talks about an accountability chart as opposed to like a organization chart. So it's like remove names, egos, personalities, and have an accountability chart. And I would say I'm similar to you, James. I'm very much sort of the entrepreneur. I'm not the integrator type, the operational type person. There's so much good stuff in that book. Even the issues list, working through that issues list. Probably it's one of those I feel you just need to keep rereading.
How many times, if you were to like ballpark it, how many times do you think you've read it?
I would use more as a reference book. I'd go back to bits of it. I wouldn't actually reread the whole book.
Yeah, I'd say maybe five, maybe. Scaling Up, something similar as well. I do like it. It's slightly different, but a lot of it, E-Myth's obviously another good book. It's kind of seen as a Bible, Michael Gerber, and he talks about there's either technician, manager, or the entrepreneur. You're obviously different types. What would you say? What split would you be? I'd say you're
confused.
I'd say you're definitely quite a bit of a technician and an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I'd probably split across that.
Would you say you're a manager?
If I'm allowed to use the word shit. I think the other systems are, I'm not familiar with these other systems, but providing it works for you. We did try to keep it vanilla, but what we tried to do was to de-Americanize it. Just to take the cheese out of it a wee bit. Just, rocks, we didn't use the word rocks. We introduced the word promises. Right. It just felt more real. And people made promises, which was great for us in the bottom line. That the good news stories in the morning, everybody has to share a good news story. That's a bit cheesy, right? It's not us, So we had a bit of crack beforehand and then, but everybody had to contribute to that crack. So it was, It was the same thing, but just in a different coat.
Yeah. Yeah.
What year did you put it in?
We got a guy to come in who was a bit of a ninja in it. He was selling
Richard
McMullen. Yeah. The great Richard McMullen.
No, Richard, yeah.
And he came in and he did a great job for us, I have to say. And we held 3 or 4 sessions and he installed traction very, very quickly and got it up and running and functioning. And, you know, I think actually Richard's a great consultant. I think he's doing something on, you know, improving the value of your business now at the minute. But as a traction ninja, I really thought he was very effective.
Yeah, he's like an implementer for the program, and there is other people that do it. I think it is good to do because it removes kind of, I don't know, people in black box, maybe similar to you, maybe don't totally buy in if I'm pushing it, you know, whereas if you can bring someone in that's totally removed and not biased, etc., can help. But we didn't do that, but probably should have did it. Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot of politics about it. If you try to introduce it and so on, is it you being authoritarian or is it you being daddy? You know, there's just a lot of stuff. Whereas he comes in and says, do you want to keep it vanilla? Then this is how you do it. Yeah. And that's it. And whether it's setting the values or, you know, running setting the vision and so on, it really helps just to have someone to knock back the people who are trying to make a chocolate rather than vanilla, or, you know, take it off in a different direction.
Yeah. No, definitely is probably one of the top books. We have another book here as well.
Yeah. Sorry. So while you introduce that book, James, because you were the one that turned me onto that, and I have to say it's been very helpful, and I'll talk a bit more about it in a second. I will pour. What are we going for next? Do you want to go for the pale ale, or do you want to go for the blonde?
Listen, entirely up to yourselves. You know, I'm easy to get along.
Choose your own adventure.
Pale ale, I think.
Right,
let's try the pale ale. So that's good.
So tell us about the drama triangle then, James. How did you come across
that? You want
me
to tell you about that? a little knowledge is a very dangerous thing. It's actually not a thick book. It's not a big book to read. It's
like a leaflet almost.
Yeah, it's a pamphlet sort of thing. But it's a well recognized and people who, you know, in the world of psychology and psychiatry and so on will recognize the drama triangle. And I think it's got another name as well, named after a person, but I'm not familiar with that. But it's a really interesting summary of the way a lot of us will spend a lot of our life somewhere running between victim, rescuer and persecutor. I had to look at the book to pay. But I got away with it. And, you know, anywhere inside that triangle is kind of really sort of child state, because you're running a temper or a tantrum or, you know, whatever. And the idea is to try and recognize that you're in that one of those states, either a victim, as I say, rescuer or persecutor, and try and get out of that and understand why, you know, what's happened in your past, or to trigger that autonomous, which is largely autonomous reaction to get you in there. Mm-hmm. And so you're beginning to realize I'm beginning to wing this, because that's but I'm fascinated by that type of psychology. I'm fascinated by just because it seems to unveil you, undress you.
It does, yeah.
And you think it's only you playing that game when everyone else playing exactly the same bloody games. And to have an adult conversation, you need to step outside that. And that happens infrequently. Mm-hmm. And it's great when it does. And then, you know, in work, so much politics floats about. So many agendas are running about, or people are trying to, you know, work things. So the less of that stuff, because you're in the triangle when you're doing that, you're definitely and you're in the middle of all that stuff. And if you can get outside that, then you have mature adult conversations, and that's just where you want to be.
So, like, you have the book in your hand, you're looking at it, Greg. So that triangle there, what I took away from the book, because you actually sent it to me after our podcast, and I read it, I devoured it. I was like, mate, this is like someone giving you the keys to understand the universe. You're like, goodness. Yeah. And so, like, what I really remember from that book is that the goal in the drama triangle is for everyone to try and become the victim. So even the persecutor and the rescuer, their ultimate goal is to put themselves in the shoes of the victim. So, like, the rescuer will come into the situation and will try to save the situation. And you can apply this to, and they talk about this in the book, you can apply it to your family dynamic, you can apply it to your work dynamic, you can apply it to, like, a nation dynamic, so how different countries interact with each other. Yeah. And so, like, the rescuer will come in and will try to, you know, be the savior and sort the situation out. But ultimately, it's for them to then turn around and be like, you don't appreciate me? What the heck? Like, I've come in and I've tried to save this and you won't even let me do it.
And so you're the persecutor?
And then boom! Then you turn into the persecutor and then you're back in the victim seat. Yeah. And the reason is, because like you said, that word, that term, adult conversation, like, the role of the victim is so emotionally manipulative that you can get what you want without having to ask for it.
Tears are great. Yeah,
tears are
whatever
great.
It is, yeah, yeah.
Literally.
Tantrum, yeah, yeah, whatever.
And they talk about getting out of the triangle, and that is, like you said, James, it's having an adult conversation where you're not emotionally blackmailing somebody, but you know you're outside of the triangle whenever you are asking for what you specifically want or what you need. And I think, like, to zoom this out a wee bit, like, my wife's German, and they are straight talkers. Like they are straight to the point. Like, there's no fluff. There's very little kind of pandering. And I remember, like, my first few interactions with them, like, even at Christmas and stuff, I'd be like, do you guys talk to each other like this all the time? And they were like, what do you mean? Because we're so used to beating around the bush and coming at things sideways.
Diplomacy.
It's so diplomatic. And they just shoot straight. And yeah. You know what people want, you know what people need, and you know where you stand.
Diplomacy or avoidance or denial or all sorts of shit. So, and I think that, that a lot of what attaches you to the victim or one of those other modes is you're getting something from it, or you want to get something from it. Yeah. You've got this emotional attachment to it, and you ended up, maybe from previous experience, you got your way by being that way or whatever, and this time you don't, and then the resentment kicks in, and then but once you're caught in the triangle, it's very hard to get out of it. Yeah. You know, because the emotions run high and you're sucked into that sort of spiral.
So if you're not in any of these three areas, where should you be? Where's the
an adult conversation, the triangle, yeah, where you're communicating what you need and you've no problem on the receiving end of that, to be like, yes, that's okay, I can give you that, or yeah, no, sorry, I can't give you that.
And you're okay receiving that information. Yeah, it's just an adult conversation. It's voiced that way because it's easily understood what it is. That dangerous. But again, I there's loads of books I think you'd absorb and suck up like a sponge, because you just find, I'm like that. I do that. I do this crap. What am I? Yeah. If something upsets you, you're just drawn into that. And and it's getting out of it.
Do you think a lot of it comes from childhood, previous
experience? Bounty.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're formed by five, they say, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, like, what you guys were saying about traction, I like that book because it puts such simple language and gives you like a bit of a vocabulary to understand what is going on inside of you or what you see play out all the time. I love it now, honestly. See, since I've read that book, I just, if there's any sort of conflict situation going on, I just like to sit back and be like, and there's the rescuer, and there's the persecutor, and wait for it, and there's the victim. It's like a soap opera of your life. You know?
That's hateful.
So all the psychologists listen, it's like, that boy needs flipping, he needs checked out.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bit of business there.
So have you ever used this in the workplace?
I think the best use of it is in the mirror. You know, why am I in this state? For me, a lot of my issues were around authority. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my older friends in there will recognize that. You know, there'll be no raised eyebrows. Anybody listening that knows me. Yeah, so the whole authority piece and, coming from a lack of confidence or, asserting yourself when you really didn't know, but feeling that leadership means you have to assert yourself all that stuff.
Being a CEO is banging the fist on the
table. Well, you need to be assured and set in direction, and how can they follow if you're not confident yourself? And see, but you're guessing it, you're winging it a lot of the time. So, it's not a book, but that intel thing about disagree and commit. You know, I find that around the whole authority piece very enlightening. I got that in a course when it was the one Brett McGurgan was on, and Jeremy in the crowd, or we were down in IMD in Lausanne, Switzerland for a few months.
Unpack that for us.
That one was, so I believe it's Intel. I'm giving them the credit for this one. Yeah, and it's the principle around it. It's largely back to authority, but we're all there in the room having a conversation about something, and there should be an open space and a free space for everybody to voice their opinion, mm-hmm, and hopefully come away with the best solution, decision, whatever. And the idea is that it's all about disagree and throw the disagreements out there, and not deliberately disagree, but, you know, get all that in there and get all that discussed, and then come to an informed decision at the end of it. But once the decision's taken, and whoever that decision's taken, you know, there could be many ways. It could be democratic, it could be consensus, it could be autocratic by whoever's in there. Ultimately, whenever that's taken, then commit to that. And there's no dissent from that. But what you find a lot of time is you'll sit in a room and everybody agrees something, and then they all head off and do their own thing or check out something else or take direction. So I find that a light bulb moment, because there was a lot of stuff going on in the business, and it was largely down to me not giving clear direction or whatever. But I find people coming in and would agree they were going to do, or at least I thought would agree they were going to do one thing, and then something else was happening. And I found that incredibly frustrating, and I jumped into the triangle, obviously, straight away, and started bouncing around in there.
And that's the thing. Like, I think, like, you get into the, you have a default of how you get into the drama triangle.
Yeah.
But like, once you're in, then you're bouncing around like mad.
It's very hard to get it. It's very hard to see. You're emotionally attached to it, and it can be fun. And there's usually there's some payback. Some payback, and painful and all the rest. But it's when you're in there, it's all you know.
Yeah, it's the same reason why EastEnders and Coronation Street is so popular.
Yeah,
and that's just a drama triangle on a screen.
Yeah, you just justify your behaviours and so on. And paranoia is a big part of it.
So how did you take the, as much as possible, the emotion out of business for you, considering you were so attached to it and you were passionate about it and your name was attached to it, like you said? How do you start to take some of that oxygen out of the fire?
Well, I think the intel on the disagree and commit made it clear to me. And then once I was clear, it became clear to everybody else. Nice. And just simple comments at the end of a meeting, just saying, okay, let's just run through that. I mean, simple, run through the actions, run through the agreements. What if we add in agreements to that, add in, you know, assumptions that have been used, and we're all agreed those are clear assumptions. We're all agreed that clear this is the what we've agreed to do. So it's clear now to everybody this is what we're going to do. And you're not using words like dissent or whatever, but you know, in a military state, that would be, you know, that would be dissent, would be the mutiny or worse, you know. So it can undermine authority, and that can dissolve into all sorts of political battles.
No fuzzy communication.
No, and I was an artist in grey. It was brilliant.
I go back to something earlier. Like you said, you know, I don't know if it's a Jim Collins thing or not, but no, it's attraction thing. Like a manager, technician, an entrepreneur.
That's from E-Myth.
That's kind of E-Myth?
Yeah.
Oh, Michael Gerber. That's Gerber. Right. Where do you fall on that?
I'm 8, 8, no, let me see.
Do you have percentages for us?
I mean, yeah, well, because everyone's a blend of it. So, and I'll guess you, I'd say I'm 80% entrepreneur, 5% technician, and probably, well, actually, probably 90% entrepreneur, 5% of each. I think you're, James, probably, I think you're probably 60% technician. Very skilled. I seen James, you remember the station you set up to make the
the wee carousel,
mind blowing how you make the COVID face masks. And he had basically created this production line, and it was like a circle table, and he had lured me in there, some cheap labor. Jane was working too, so
it wasn't that cheap from what I remember. And I didn't get much labor.
He was just trying to upfill that technician's idea. He's like 5% come on, let's bring us up to 10 here.
I agree with your 90% percent, by the way. Chance.
I think it's aware, because I mean you get loads of like say joiners or plumber or whatever the skill is, but they're so in that they're never going to be. That's probably why builders maybe get a bad rap, is because, you know, they're too much of a technician and they can't run the business. So I think it is to have just awareness. What would you say your blend is? I think you're definitely 60%.
My technician would be the main thing. I mean, I just, design. That's just, I've just finished making a trommel for a friend of mine to get dust out of hay.
Canadian, I was going to bring that up. So when I called James to do this, he's like, yeah, I'm just building this thing for rabbit sawdust to take. And I was like, the heck?
That's great fun.
Well, how do you feel you ran the company if you were such a good technician then?
That's a really interesting question, which is probably a semantic for I hate you right now.
Give me another beer.
Start with the good questions, would you? I much gravitate much more to the shop floor than I would any other area of the business. And I'm happier when I'm down and assembling or working things out or tinkering with things and so on. So I wasn't the leader by choice. Well, I was, but it wasn't, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Whereas I'm comfortable with sales, you know, and very sales focused. Yeah, but yeah, it's funny, and probably subconsciously just like always lured or pulled that way. But what's your view on 360 feedback?
Yeah, I always hated it, but always had to take it on board and try and just like to try and take it on board and what's, you know, because I'm really, really used to it. I have a beautiful wife called Jane, and she's really expert at that.
5D feedback.
Oh, yeah, honestly, it's
the right sign.
It's a joy.
Yeah.
What about you? Do you get some feedback on occasions?
Occasionally, probably not as much. They're called blind spots for a reason, so... Yeah.
My wife must have some German in her.
I wanted to ask you, whenever James was talking about the importance of like a leader being confident, being strong, something I admire about you is that you're very self-aware. And I hear you talk quite a lot about the things that you're not good at. How do you manage that confidence and that clarity and that kind of leadership sort of personality with that awareness?
I believe just in transparency, I feel, and even like a bit of, I don't know if humility, but like we are doing team meetings every morning again, or team huddles. And like, I just shared with the team this morning, I was like, you know, I was shitting myself driving to do the morning meeting, you know, I am human. Yeah. And just try to, I don't know, just be honest with people. I think
vulnerable
is hugely important. Like with COVID, I said to our guys, like, I don't know what's going to happen here. We may have to let people off. But I just said, whatever happens, we want to come out of this a better company. And I think servant leadership is something that trying to, you know, definitely not perfect at it, but as opposed to, you know, me standing up, hitting my chest on I'm the best, you know.
Smoking mirrors.
Yeah. People don't buy into that. And I think I have so many flaws, but one thing I think, you know, within Black Box, people will never, I would never ask someone to do something that I'm not willing to do. And I think that's maybe just where I have a bit of respect, is that I'm very much working, you know, a lot at this and doing the best, and I think people will respect that. I think respect's a big thing. But very much still learning, and learn a lot from some of our chats and Traction as well. You put your values up on the wall. You had a nice sign, didn't you?
Yeah, they it was part of the Traction process. They put it up there. And I think it's great to learn by mistakes. And I did a lot of learning. I mean, I'm still learning a lot to this day, you know. I think if you can get, a highest level of ownership, it's very difficult to get with such a diverse range of, you know, teams in a company, and you'll be the same. There'll be one set will be hard manufacturing, another set will be, you know, internet savvy, and and the values are not the same in those two departments. One's a hard work ethic, you know, and it's a different area. So to try and get homogenous values to work across it is a bit of a tricky tightrope to walk. If you can do it, great. But as corporations grow, for them to put values up, I think it's a lot of it. You know, they've got a company in Japan and a company in San Diego, and they're going to say they've got the same values. What a lot of it.
Yeah. I think culture, we probably haven't touched on as good as these Traction and some of these books are. Yeah. Culture, so, I think.
That was on the tip of my tongue, because I was going to say to you, like, every single one of my mates, like, I mean, it's like half of my mates are all engineers, and they all want to work for Black Box. They're like, how long would the commute be? It might be 2 hours for me. Yeah, I think it would still be worth it. Like, it just looks so unbelievable. And there's like such a buzz about that place. Like, I've put out like 200 episodes, and it, like always, your friends and your family are the hardest people to please. Like, all my mates were all over that episode like a rash, because they're like, they love the, at least either the culture or the perceived culture that you've put out. They're like, look at that, Jim. You can just work out in your workplace and all.
Yeah. I mean, it is really irritating.
Instead of a coffee machine, you know, they imagine there's like a protein machine. You just...
coffee's essential. That's one of our interview questions. Do you drink coffee? And if it's a no,
Sorry. Yeah. This job's not for you.
It's a bit of a joke, just by the way. But that's nice to hear. I'm kind of half laughing because, I joke to people, if there's one thing I'm good at, it's creating an illusion of success. But I think actually one of our team I did join from listening to the podcast. So I'm glad to be back. And we're always on the lookout for good talent. So, but equally, and I, from a recruitment point of view, let me just be clear on that. Like, it's quite it's a fast moving place. You know, we're trying to grow and we don't really know what we're doing. We're doing our best, but we've a young team, and it's probably one of the maybe mistakes. I think culture is the most important thing. You know, Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. I still do believe in that, but I think I used to probably show a bit of a bias to getting young people in who are into training. And some of the best hires we've made are some of the slightly older generation, because experience is hard to beat. If we can get someone with experience who fits in culture and a growth mindset, and that's probably one of the best books is Carl Dweck's mindset books. You know, he talks about growth mindset versus the closed mindset, and that's what we want. We want people, and some of our best hires are people that have not went to university, that are just hungry to learn, as opposed to
smart but not educated.
I like that. And work ethic is the number one. You know, people that resourcefulness. You know, someone that can turn lemons into lemonade. That's what we want, as opposed to, you know, someone that's. Yeah, I don't want to say something that shouldn't. So,
what's your move been like out of Titanic Quarter? Because for me, that was very embedded in your company identity and who you were. And how do you then, like, what was the big reason to move? I suppose space more than anything, was it?
I grew up. James gave me great advice too. You know, we were struggling to find a space big enough for us anywhere in Northern Ireland. We looked at potentially buying Right Boss or other places. And then even just funny how your ego jumps in, you want to buy a building. And it was actually also Ben, Ben. Look, you're a growth company. Use your cash wisely. Yeah, you don't need a building. And you even said to me, like,
you're not property, you know. And
split my own personal kind of pension or whatever, for the business. So I had was a really good advice of, you know, what the business needs. And we decided to rent. And it was a much better move because then it allows us to, you know, invest in growth
again. I
think again.
Growth requires agility. And if you lose that, you know, then it's going to hamstring you in terms of decisions. You'll be so far down a cul-de-sac with property commitments or whatever it is, and then you've got barriers to whatever. So absolutely keep it lightfoot.
Yeah. So I think that's just speaking to people, getting different viewpoints is hugely important. But the move's been I definitely have a few more grey hairs than I did at the start of the year. But it is cool having everything under one roof. We've got our first robotic welder in. I know you've got one of those.
There's a few more grey hairs coming your way. Somebody's way, anyway.
So, yeah, it's been a challenge, you know. Definitely our lead time kind of went way through the roof. We were working 24-hour shifts. We just had a board meeting today. Our margin is down significantly. Sure. We've been working 24-hour shifts for the past few months. We're going to need to recover, which I'm confident we'll do. But, every day is a fun challenge, so it is.
I think you need to minimize pain level, the threshold to the customer. I think you can suffer pain and you should suffer pain, not the customer. So
That's 100%.
And I think you do that. I think that's part of your ethos.
That's crazy. Stade Francais, a French rugby team, got in touch and they were like, they need an order in like 4 weeks. Normally this type of project would take about 12, but I was like, yep, we'll be able to do it. It's going to be hard.
You are a salesperson.
But I shared
1% technician.
I love it. Like Greg's origin story's mad. It's like, what was it? Conor McGregor's coach calls.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, can you make this? And Greg's like, yeah, absolutely. And he's like,
yeah, no clue.
How on earth did I do this?
Yeah, we talk about win, then worry. It's like, get the sale and we'll figure out a way. I share that to our some of our clients, because like I'll admit, like things will be crazy behind the scenes, but we'll get the job done. And I think people buy into that because like I'm putting my own reputation on the line. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm hiding behind layers of a brand or a big company. It's my own reputation. So, but we still get things wrong.
I think you're an epic success story. I think it's really interesting. Yeah,
totally.
No. You're more of a success.
All right. You break it up. Come on.
Where's the beer?
What do you think of the pale ale?
Very tasty. Very sweet. Nice. Yeah.
I've finished with that, although we'll need to see. You need to see what the Irish Blonde does to me. But I think the pale ale would be a nice way to end the night, I think.
Yeah. No, I love it. And the fact that it's local too. I love anything local. It just tastes better. So keep it coming.
100%. Right. Irish Blonde and a wild card book.
Well, just a quick story, if I may.
Oh, please. We're about.
It just reminded me of something that's going back. Whoa. Like, I'm 63. I'm going back to when I was 19. And just the way you said that just brought it back to me. We'll take the sale and figure it out. Mm-hmm. We had this bizarre idea around the kitchen table, my brother and I, and he's a year younger. And that was that 40-something, 42, 43, 44 years ago, and that we could sell. We were florists, pardon me. Family business was florists in Belfast, and we were all into supplying. And it was around St. Patrick's Day we came up with the idea we could sell Shamrock to the Americans, and they would love it. They would love it. We hadn't done notion.
Jeez Louise, James.
So we had to go out and prove the market, and we did a bit of research. Now, back then, there was no Tinderweb, obviously. This is way, way back. And we got on the, did a bit of research and realized you're not allowed to import soil into America. So we had to come up, when we researched and we found out there was a gel you could grow shamrock in. And you could put it in tinfoil and sand. So we figured out some of the technical things we figured them out. And we got a meeting we were literally just getting on a plane and heading out and jumping in a car and driving down to Washington to meet with the agriculture department in Washington. And we got a high-level guy, and he just loved the idea. And whether he had Irish roots or whatever, and he says, yeah, like we can get this working now. So you're not allowed to currently to import live media, but if it's not in soil, we think we can do this. And if you can get the business going, we'd support you and change the rules.
My goodness.
We were brilliant. And we went to New York the next day, and we'd worked out that we had to sell, now this is back in a cigarette packet, we had to sell 65,000 sprigs of shamrock to break even.
Oh my goodness.
So we had to go in and get commitments from the wholesalers in New York. And it was a horrible sell. They were just so tough. But it took us 3 days, and we managed to get commitments from all the wholesalers that we met there. But these were verbal. There was no orders or anything. Sure. You get 30 seconds with the guys. But we got verbal commitment that they would take so many thousand. And we had it all up with over the 65,000. So we had a few beers and partied and decided we'd go up and see if there was enough. Well, Chicago was too far. We'd drive up to Boston before we flew and try that. And we went up there, and there's a big wholesaler market down, flower market down the center called Faneuil Hall. And there's an old church there. It's a lovely part, and I've been back many a time. But we were sitting just having a coffee before we went in, and there was a florist, and there was a big sign up, and it said Shamrock from Ireland.
No! Oh no!
He can't do that. That's going to upset my. That's going to wreck everything. So I went and I said, "The guy, see if a sign up there. You can't actually currently bring Shamrock from Ireland." He says, "No. There's a big farm upstate New York, and he's called the Farm Ireland."
That is so dirty.
Ding dong! Oh, but wasn't that great? We decided to go to Boston. Wasn't that great? We decided just to stand at Faneuil Hall. Otherwise, we would have been screwed. We would have been out the next year, and we would have nailed. So it was such a good thing. But it was just and tails between our legs flying home. But great learning, fantastic fun.
That's even for business, doing things like that, you know, being a door-to-door salesman or...
The no, the no, the yeah.
Yeah. No means not just yet. So you should maybe go.
Timing issue.
See, next time you come back, we're just going to do a sales masterclass with Greg Bradley.
Yeah, it's probably is one the only good thing. I don't even know if I'm that good at, but
persistent, insistent, consistent.
Persistence is, you know, the fortune's in the follow up. That's what we say to people. You have to.
No is not yet.
But some of the clients you've picked up is unbelievable. Like,
yeah.
It's star-studded.
Yeah. It is, you know, and long may hopefully it continue. But
said the last time, can't wait for you to fit out like Brad Pitt's gym or something.
Yeah. I was actually over in Warner Brothers headquarters in London there last week. So touch wood, that might come good. But it's Dave Grohl's physio who's brought us to the table, and I just want to get in and maybe do a gym for Dave.
So what's how does Black Box get in front of the other competition? What's your secret sauce? Tell the competition right now.
Yeah, just email them all your business.
Well, I'll tell that story offline.
All right. So we're not going to hear the magic dust, right?
No, I'll share. I don't know. I think it's a few factors: the business model, local manufacturing, relationship. You know, lots of
flexible. And you can do. Yeah, the answer is yes. Now, what's the question? Sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll find a way. I've spent the past 9 years saying yes. I did walk away from a sale, believe it or not, quite probably for the first time.
You've got to keep that victim.
The drama triangle. Yeah, you took that home with you.
I was in it for a fortnight. Took to the drink.
Comes out 2 weeks later, he's like, so that's what the drama triangle is, right?
Now I need to go home and read this.
Customers you don't want.
Why'd you say no?
What's that?
Why did you say no?
I think, look, we've done a few projects like close to cost and stuff and just thought probably don't need to do this anymore. Actually, we said one, the big one in Australia as well, just, I don't know, it's the other side of the world. And I think sometimes you can spend so much time taking you one direction, and is that taking you really closer to where you
want to? Have you been to Australia?
Yeah.
It's a great place. I'll do it. You give it to me. <Give me seven. laughs> The Barrier Reef, it's up there somewhere, no?
Yeah. I'll maybe go back and send an email. So.
Did you hear about these mice? Did you see that?
No. Oh, I did. I saw
some.
Oh,
my goodness.
The carpets of them.
I was listening to an interview today.
Was that us?
And the farmer said that in the country, there's like a plague of mice is like desecrating that part of the country. He used the value billions. And the interviewer said, oh, did you say millions? And he's like, no. There are actually billions of these mice and we don't know how to control them.
In Australia?
Yeah, well, you might just tell you things like that got out of control. Nature gets out of balance, bang.
All your crops, all everything. Like apparently, like literally, like you're driving on the road at night and the whole road's just fur. What is that like?
Yeah. But it's, I mean, then the tendency is to, you know, what eats mice? And then that gets out of control. And then you're in a whole cycle of man-made disasters.
Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, what's your book, James?
Traction and the drama.
This one here?
No, this is God bless my wife. She's an absolutely fantastic cook.
Nice.
And I've got a heavy degree in learned helplessness in that direction. so I don't, and I find it just, I'm not a good cook. I just haven't done it. My kids will, you know, attest to that as well. And recently, I think just patience and tolerance ran out. You got to cook once a week. And nice. I took up Jamie Oliver's 5 Ingredients Quick and Easy Food, and it's superb. And I'm actually enjoying cooking.
Wow.
Did you bring us any food?
He brought us beer.
Are we going to share why he brought the beer this week?
It's not going to come out of my mouth to tell you that.
Well, I'll get into the victim triangle.
Yes, please jump in. We'll do a wee session here.
James stood us up last week, so me and Matt had to help.
You went there. Look at Mr. Persecutor. Will I be the rescue here? Will I jump in and back?
Go for it.
He had a book on memory. He was showing us.
But I forgot it. so that's my book. And it's you said, you know, let's talk about three books. And I think there's another book coming up. But Yes, yeah, so I'm enjoying that. And I've, you know, been in doing some Italian cooking, some curries and stuff like that. And there's actually a whole area of fun and pleasure in there that I always thought was a chore. So do you cook, Greg?
Do a little bit.
Would you need a book like this?
Well, yeah, I have that book, but I don't actually use it. But
how did you get that book?
Oh, you got it, yeah.
How did you get that book, Greg? There's some sort of rumor I heard about that.
Oh, Jamie Oliver. I sound like a name dropper, but no.
That's because you're name dropping.
That's one of my specialities. So, no, thankfully, did a gym for him for his headquarters in London and met him, and he gave me a signed copy for my little sister. So I might actually steal the book from her. So, yeah. But in fairness, really cool guy. And he was actually saying every recipe they create, it costs them like £1,800 because they get it all tested for macronutrients and whatnot.
Wow. To make sure they're not putting stuff out there that's not good for you.
Yeah, just making sure it's what they said it was. And yeah. He's doing a degree or master's in nutrition. So no, he was really cool guy, so kept in touch a little bit with him. And ironically, I actually met him a couple of years before, but I was very hungover in London and got a photo with him. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's we're best.
I remember that as well. Yeah,
nice. Doesn't nice. Remember that one.
You bumped in and he goes, fuck you, I haven't seen you that long. How are you getting that?
Yeah.
Bestie. So what's your favourite recipe in that?
To be honest, there's a chicken mushroom one that which is really, really nice. Yeah. The curry is super. It's so quick.
Five ingredients is great.
Yeah.
And is it quick as well?
It is very, very quick. That's well, most of them are there. It's a meatball mozzarella one, a bit of pesto in the meatballs and put it on. Mm. Really super, very wow. quick, dead easy. You know, for the blokes out there who can't cook, this is just so good. Jamie Oliver's five ingredients.
Good easy sale.
Food. Yeah, very, very, good very good.
My wild card book then, the third one we said would be Choose Your Own. I've gone for The Alchemist. I feel like our podcast, Greg, all we did was talk. Like the first 20 minutes was just like, have you read that book? And have you read this book? And have you read this one?
I haven't. I actually feel bad, but I'm looking forward to
this is one, it. This is one for you to check out because I think like most people fall into the nonfiction sort of department. I don't read a lot of fiction, if I'm honest. And that book, it's one of those books that like literally you hear everywhere. Like I feel like for a time there, like every podcast I listened to, everyone was talking about The Alchemist. And I was like, flip sake, I'll give it a go. And the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like, it reminds me of like a bedtime story. It's very, very simply written, very simple language. Like you could read it to literally a kid, but it's got so much depth to it. And it is literally, I think it's like the tagline is like a fable for following your dreams, which you could say is cheesy and American and it probably is. But it captures that like hero's journey, which is something that I'm a big fan of like if you look at every story, whether mm-hmm. it's business or whether it's mythological, there is that kind of hero's arc. It's all like set in the Middle East. And so you kind of feel like you're transported to another world. And I think it's applicable for business or your own goals, your own life. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. There is a audiobook version of it.
Okay.
That is read by a guy called Jeremy Irons.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The actor. Yeah.
So he, for people listening, he did the voice in Scar, I think it's probably in The Lion King, probably the closest thing. And I mean, the way he reads that book is just so epic.
Well, that's nice.
It's maybe like a 4-hour listen. So it's like super good. But that's a book I've probably read about 5 times.
Better reading or listening?
Do you know what? I would say listen to that bad boy.
Okay.
I would say that's a wee Audible download for you.
Create a reminder.
Yeah.
And I think the cultural, you know, there's been significant cultural change and experience change in the Middle East, you know, over the last century or the last 50 years. But I think from memory, it depicted quite a nice culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were much better times before. I suppose fundamental religion and a lot of war torn and you know foreign intervention and all those things took place and it's now very complex.
Well, that's the thing, you know, if you like in that book especially, but even if you look historically, you know, you've got a very very family community led sort of place. But it's mad, you know. It also like it just takes you to a different time, you know. It follows the story of a shepherd boy and it's just mad stuff. Like I was talking to a mate recently, and I'm like, can you imagine that? Like shepherds used to just like sleep outside, like. Rough with like no sleeping bag or no camping equipment. Like we go camping and like up the moors. It's like, oh, it was a wee bit cold last night. And you're like, how did these boys do it back in the day? Yeah. Carnage.
Different world. But a great book. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. A lot of lessons in there.
You've read it then. I need to.
I think I saw the movie, if the truth be known. I read the book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any system for reading? Do you read in the morning, evening, or just whenever you get a chance?
I'm going to be honest. I am a bit of a binge reader. So I'll like not read for like 2 or 3 months. And then I'll just get it in my head. Oh, I really want to read. And I'll plow through maybe 1 or 2 a week. And then I'll do that for maybe 2 months. And I'll take 2 months off. I used to try to be a bit more rigid about it. And just like the last few years, I'm like, look, I'm not going to fight this. Like, you know, I'm not going to spend the willpower, the precious bit of willpower I have, like forcing myself to do this. So I just ride the waves now. I would be a big podcast listener, obviously. I feel like I have to be.
Yeah.
But I do love audio. But there is something nice, especially whenever I would be taking time off or going away somewhere. I love taking a book. I know it's like a wee bit of like a souvenir, or a wee bit of like almost like a touristy thing. But I like that. Like I like going away to like an Airbnb or something and just having that book. Used to work with chronic hoarders. You ever seen that TV program where people would keep stuff?
So we
lived in New York for 3 years, and what part of the work we did was with the hoarding community. And so it was like you would work maybe 60 hours a week with these people, with one person, 60 hours a week for maybe a month. And the progress was so slow. Like there'd be days, literally entire days, and you'd maybe get one bag out. And then all of a sudden, you would get everything out because you'd have a breakthrough. But I used to love then in between that going and doing like painting jobs, just painting and decorating jobs. Because would go and you would see the wall.
Yeah.
And then you would paint the wall and you're like, oh, job done.
Yeah.
Like it was very satisfying. I'm a Kindle reader like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do love about a paperback is you can see the progress. You see A to Z. And whenever you get there is a very satisfying feeling when you close the book. You're like, oh, yeah.
I'm not a big reader, to be honest. I'm dyslexic or some damn thing, but I need to be really wanting to know what's in that book before I. And the flip side of that is that if I'm reading a book and I'm not getting gripped by it, very, very little fiction I'll pick up. But if I'm reading, I'm not getting it. I'm looking at how much more is left to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do I want to lose that part of my life and never get it back? No, I don't. So, yeah, so most of my books in the library, they're all, you know, they're business books.
Yeah.
Vast majority, whereas over Jane's side, there'll be yoga, spiritual, or fiction.
Yeah.
More good balance.
Holistic
stuff, yeah.
I mean, you devour books. What's your system?
I don't know if I would have a system per se. I do try to do a little bit in the morning when stretching. Now, kind of, the world's opening up, more traveling, it can be a bit harder to do that. Sundays I try to use for personal development.
When you say stretch, like, are you listening to stuff or do you have the book in front of you? Like,
I do a bit of yoga, downward dog, cobra, and just read, squats, etc. Just have it on the iPad and read, highlight. Try to generally, I'll highlight in the Kindle or iPad and then export it out and create little summaries of the books. I do like what Bill Gates, kind of reading weeks as well, similar to you, go on holidays. I'm actually craving to get away somewhere and read a load of books because.
So you just love reading books and the knowledge, the acquisition, absorbing them. I find it very difficult. The words are just lost in the page.
Yeah, but sure, I left school like 16. Yeah. I was not good in school, but now I love reading and love learning. And it's like your guy Neville, he talks about it's just get into something. I love reading probably business books more than anything. Yeah. Write a Lifetime's your guy, whose name I've just forgot, that was CEO of Disney.
What a holy guess.
Someone told me about this book.
Really good book.
I have it saved on my Kindle to read, actually. Someone gave me such a good endorsement for it. I was like, flip me, I might have to read this one.
He is an absolute genius, and he's like Rob Iger or Bob Iger. Even I listened to a podcast with him, and he gets up at like 5 a.m. on to Versa Climb or exercising for 45 minutes, and this guy's like 55 or 60.
Epic.
And I'm 33 and I can't even do it. And you just hear stuff like that and you're like, fuck, I need to get up my game. So it's a really good book.
Did you say ruck there? I think you said ruck, you need to up your game there. Put her on there. I'm sure it was something you said.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think my book would be, I was just looking there to see what my book would be. I don't know if to go with a business one or, I think for business people, there's a book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's from a guy, Ben Horowitz in America.
Oh, I heard of him, yeah.
He talks about like just, you know, stuff that most people won't write about in books, whether it be like firing a friend or demoting a friend or
Ouch.
Controlling your psychology in business. And that's probably the most important thing is controlling your psychology, whether someone, here too.
Yeah, trying to
and just you read it and you just like, oh, that's, I can really relate to that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one I've read quite a few times.
It's a great book on difficult conversations. Who wrote that?
Yeah, that's Critical Conversations.
Could be Critical Conversations, but it's essentially about difficult conversations. Yeah, ones you find hard.
Yeah.
The secret, that's in the name.
What's your approach to that?
Well, it's just what I got from that was just a greater awareness of the amount of tension you were experiencing approaching it. And whether that was going to help you or not help you or hinder you in the conversations.
I find things never turn out. You know, you get it in your head before how bad it's going to be or how much you're dreading it. And then once it's done, it's like, oh, that was fine.
I think the more I've entered it, trying to understand the other person's perspective and get there first, the more successful the conversations have been. If I go in purely trying to get my point across and be, you know, demanding, which I've done on many an occasion unwittingly and foolishly, it's not worked out well. And I would imagine I wouldn't be a good recipient if somebody just tell me how things are, you know. So I definitely think, and I think that book would spend a bit of time, you know, focusing on the inquiry aspect of, you know, the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it if you go in with that, then there's an awful lot less to fear, Yeah.
What's your view on the shit sandwich?
When somebody starts saying nice things, you just, here it comes.
Yeah.
Here it comes. Yeah. No, thank you.
I feel like it's too predictable. Or it's like it's too formulaic or something. Because when you're on the receiving end of it or the giving end of it, it just feels like I'm doing a wee artificially constructed thing here.
Front up front.
Mm.
Say what you want at the outset.
I think one thing I try to be quite laid back and empower people, but I would like to think I'd stay, try to be positive, but I kind of just have this, if I'm not, maybe you're similar to that, whereas kind of can go from like nice guy to maybe just a wee bit kind of
edgy.
Yeah. I don't want to lose my temperature, but it's kind of just like, I don't know, there's no kind of middle ground. You're either best friend or it's quite a heated conversation. But, yeah, I'd say you've had a few of those over the...
I'll take the compliment. Yeah, if it's not going my way, then I'll become self-imposed victim that it's me. I'm not doing this well, but I'm the victim of me not doing this well.
I guess... reading books, any aspirations to write a book?
Not at all.
Brendan McGurgan's got a,
not even
I know I had.
About you in his book.
I think I might have one of the very few unsigned copies floating about the I'm joking.
Let me. That's
No, I don't. But no, God, no, not at all. I would bore the knackers off myself doing that.
I can see you writing a book.
Like yeah, that. I think that's a great journey.
I don't think I would have the patience maybe to do it. You're probably one.
Well, I think, I think like
you'd employ.
You'll sell your company and then you'll write the first draft and then you'll hand it off to like a publisher and they'll sort it
out. You can get somebody just to follow you around and write the book, you know, and listen to your nonsense and stuff.
Well, when did you realize you wanted to sell the business?
Oof. Was there a moment in time? I think coming away from the conversation, we would have just agreed a price.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Driving back up from Dublin to Belfast, going, I must want to sell it. I've just sort of notionally agreed a price there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure, but money's never been important. As long as you're comfortable, money's never been. It was about just a sense of value. Mm-hmm. And mixed in amongst all that was the amount of years and hard work you've put into it and investments. And so, and if somebody doesn't see that, because they're working on how am I going to get my money back out of this? It's a completely different, you know, formula for them. Mm. So unless the two collide, yeah. But it was, I think Jane would have been my good wife, would have been there before me and would have been saying, look, it's probably time. But it's not an option. You just don't decide, I'll sell it like a house. You know, it's a bit more tricky than that. And I've probably when we recruited the good services of Ben Stocks, mm-hmm. that's when it formally became a meaningful decision. He's just quite an amazing character.
Yeah, I would say you're probably doing yourself a bit underselling yourself.
No.
Percentage of businesses that get to that level and then even have a successful exit is
More by ass than class, possibly, but you know, with Ben on board, it was just like such a transition. It was just so easy. He was great.
You're back doing it again now.
Oh, no, you know, Richard Branson's safe. Don't worry. On the list, there's numbers safe. Don't worry. So, yeah, you know, this is tinkering. This is just a bit of fun. Nice. I'm working with some great people at the minute, and we're starting a wee design company. We've got projects to keep us going probably for the next year, 18 months, and we'll get other stuff as it goes along. And knowing the way things have evolved in the past in business, once you get into an area, whether it's at the minute, a lot of the focus is in preterm children and what we can do to help them. And once you get into that arena, you'll see other opportunities. You'll work with research bodies and great people and so on, and the light bulbs will go off. Just making connections. I don't necessarily want to manufacture or get into the hard work end of it. I really, I think, know myself on the technician side. It's the tinkering side. Yeah. You know, it's the doodling and taking it to the first prototype, and then I kind of want to get out of it and move on.
How important do you think passion is in business?
That's a zinger. Flip me, Greg.
Yeah, but I think otherwise it'd be bloody soul destroying. It'd be really hard work. I think a lot of the passion I had on reflection was for other people's benefit. You know, because you're on stage a lot of the time, and you'll know this, as people looking at you. And if you're smiling, they'll think the company's going well. And if you're running around like a grumpy bollocks, then they'll think, oh, things are bad. You know, so you're on stage a lot of time. So not a lot of this, the stuff they – and there's a lot of, you know, government bodies and other will pump you full of stuff about, you know, Northern Ireland jobs and all the stuff. And it is good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of the courses you go on, again, pumping you, you're going to do really, really well here.
Yeah.
But you're selling your soul a bit, you know. Yeah. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, good advice.
But good. I think you have passion for what you do, and I think you enjoy what you do, and long may that continue. Well, keep for as long as you want.
Yeah, no, definitely feel privileged to be in that position.
Is success a big part of it? You know, can you be passionate without success? Because there's sectors, like I just mentioned, preterm children beforehand. We worked in the field of disability. You know, Black Box is a very, their market is fitness and so on, and you can be passionate about that, but it's not as emotionally tangible, maybe, if that's the right term, and so on. So you can. I was able to have passion without necessarily feeling I was successful at times, and so on. But
I'm just fascinated with even for people that are starting out in business. You know, I don't think it's essential that it's something. You know, if it is something you're passionate about, that's a competitive advantage or an advantage. But I just think it's maybe not. You know. Not everyone's going to be able to find something that they're truly passionate about that they could make a business out of.
Understood.
And you can become passionate about it once you, mm-hmm. you know, like I don't live in the gym, but, you know, I like it, you know, I think it's an important part. But it is rewarding when you see, you know, people changing their lives or sports teams winning and stuff. So
yeah, I didn't mean to demean any of that aspect. No,
no,
absolutely
no,
not.
No, I'm the victim. So
rock off.
Cal Newport would be really into that though. Like, his big thing is the passion's overrated, and he, this guy, his big thesis is that, like, you get your passion or you get your buzz from being successful and from winning.
Yeah,
so by you going in and becoming a world class at something, that's what can give most people the buzz they need to keep going. And there is this perception, I think, especially among, you know, like pumping into like the teenage sort of market, where it's like you have to find that one thing that you love. And he's just sort of like, pick a skill, get unbelievable at it, and then maybe look at what your options are, if you know what I mean, instead of like, because not all of us can be rock stars, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
very tough.
I like Jeff Bezos talks about regret minimization framework, and that's such a geeky engineering term, but it's basically pretend you're 80 or 90, look back at your life, you know, what would you want to look back at? And, you know, you're probably James a tad older than us. No offense. I'll just get my own back.
I love that. It's like the word probably older than us. I might be older than us.
I'm being diplomatic, but
not particularly well, I must say.
But even look, I'm 33, but even I'm starting to be like, fuck, like, COVID year just went like that for me. Yeah. Like,
I'm almost 40, Greg.
Yeah, I'm just like, that is one of my 80 or 90 years gone. That seems like, you
that's
know,
true.
A month. So now I'm just like, right, you know, take risks and do whatever I want, because we are all here for a very short time. And that sounds a bit pretty deep, but
there's deep meaning things, like, you know, it's not the things you did that you regret, it's the things you didn't do you regret more, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so risk taking, I think, it's very important. Don't bet the shop necessarily on it, but I certainly think taking risks is a and not worrying about it.
Yeah, and if it does fail, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, that's just a bit of ego, you know, is the whole failure.
I do it quickly and cheaply.
And I think the Americans, in fairness, that's where I've got quite a bit of respect, as their culture is just like very pro-business and aggressive. And over here, there would be like, start small and don't overstretch yourself and stuff. But yeah, it's a different conversation.
That is. Well, lads, that is that's an hour and 15. So I'll wrap us up with a final question then. Stealing this from you, you put it in my head, Greg. What's on your list? What do you want to read next? Or what have you been thinking? What's been circling your drain where it's like, flipping should read this, but I don't want to?
James is defaulting to me. I've got a load of books. That's why I want a reading week, because I'm a little bit behind at the minute. Reading Effortless by Greg McKeown.
Yeah,
I think we had a discussion. Good. Even Bezos, as there's a, well, it's not his book, but about Amazon Unbound, I'm reading at the minute. And then I need to read some of these books.
You'll read Drama Triangle on the way home. You'll blast through it. I'll tell you what I do want to read, and it's kind of like a shame on me because I've never actually touched it. I'd love to buy a big hardback book of Seamus Heaney's poems and sit slowly and read them like over the course of like the next year.
Properly read them.
Because I've never, to be honest, I've never ever even tried to get into poetry because I'm like, I don't know if that's for me. Yeah. But I feel like I'm doing my country a disservice by not at least having given it a whack.
And then try and put Seamus some to memory as well.
Oh, can clever you
prose would be lovely. Yeah, lovely. So to recite that.
So I would say, a wee Seamus Heaney anthology.
I would know of a book I would want to read, but we are taking a bit of time out to go off on holiday. We're actually getting a camper van.
Epic.
And touring Ireland sometime soon. Yeah, there's a company down in Dromore, do Thompson Leisure, rent them out, and they're fabulous things. We did it for 1 week.
In Dromore?
Yeah. Right on the carriageway that they sell.
Yeah, I bet. I live in Dromore. I'm going to have to
On the carriageway, Thompson Leisure. They do the caravans, the motorhomes there, and they rent them out, and they're fabulous. And we did it about 3 or 4 years ago and toured around Ireland on it. Honestly, it was such an amazing holiday. And go off track. We were going to circumnavigate and go around the coast. We started down towards Waterford and so on, but then we cut inland around Tipperary, and we ended up in a place called the Glen of Aherlow. It was just unbelievable. It was like Jurassic Park. It was amazing. We had a fantastic time.
I'll have to get James back on and share some of your travel stories.
You have a huge beard and like a shepherd's staff.
You've been a racing driver and
rally driver. Long time ago. Nice. I was actually in the Glen of Arla. We pulled into a campsite and the guy said, "What about you, James?" I had no clue who he was. But it was because he followed the rally. Lovely fella. Great. No, I'm a great crack that night.
Shout for both of you, actually. Interviewed this couple. I went out last week. He's from Sweden. She's from here. Mm. And they've built, both of you would love this for so many different reasons. They've built a towable sauna, like a spa quality sauna. And they stuck it on Benoon Beach.
No.
So you go into the sauna and then you jump into the sea and then epic. Back into the sauna. Do you know what?
Is it wood burning or something?
Yeah, it's wood burning.
Oh, absolutely fantastic.
I'll show you a photo of it here. It is unbelievable. So if you're doing any of Ulster in part of your tour and you're up in Benoon Beach, give that a wee whirl.
We were paddle boarding last Saturday up in White Rocks Beach.
Class.
It was a guy called Hanno. Takes you off and he takes you through the caves and all. It was absolutely fabulous. 2 hours. It was fabulous.
Epic.
Yeah, I think it's just White Rocks Beach paddleboarding. Wow. He does surfing and he does all sorts of courses you can do for safety and water and stuff like that. But he was superb for a team working thing. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Hanno was his name. I mean, if you want, Jane booked it, but I'll get you the details. It was superb.
Good core workout.
Well, you're on your knees. Yeah, a bit of that, but not really. I mean, the wind was against us on the way up, but the way back was stood up and we went. I'm a fur seal, you know, if I stand the right way. I was going to ask for a recommendation, and I'm on this motorhome tour. I would like a book. A fiction book that I could get into, something that, for as far as you know me, would you give me a recommendation of a book, like a thriller or something you think I would enjoy?
You know what? I've actually got one for you.
Okay, cool.
It's called The Day of the Jackal.
Okay. I've seen the film, but yeah.
Mate, get the book. Okay. I think, if you're looking something that really hooks you in, you've obviously seen the film, but you know, someone recommended that to me a few years ago whenever I've been away from fiction for a long time and it really brought me in.
And not too complex, easy to follow through and so on. Yeah. Not being
but it makes you used to reading a lot. You know what I mean? It's the good thriller. It's I feel like I'm Sherlock Holmes. I'm part of this. Okay, you know what I mean? They're very, very good at that. So that would be mine off the top of my head.
Unfortunately, I don't read too much fiction. So I'm going to have to, can't help there.
Well, I'm done on the self.
Yeah, I don't need to read nonfiction ever again.
I'm done on the self-improvement. I'm not, honestly, I've got a library full of it and I've wasted more of my life getting in there with no effect.
Class. Well, what do you think? Final consensus. Which of the three Heaneys did you like the best?
I have a feeling I like the last one the best.
Which
one was that? The Irish Blonde?
That was the Blonde,
It was nice. All three were lovely. But
yeah, it's quality stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the Stout, I think.
Okay.
The Stout did it for me.
Stout was good, but I think we might need another glass of each and we'll...
Still undecided. I'm with you, actually. I don't know yet.
Very good. Well, here, look, honestly, thanks for doing this.
Pretty fun.
Literally just a random wee idea. I thought it would be a good crack. And I had a blast and I thought that was quality. So appreciate both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for the beer, James.